Straits brings legal and business insights at the intersection of the shipping and energy sectors. This podcast series offers trends, developments, challenges, and topics of interest from Reed Smith litigation, regulatory, and finance lawyers across our network of global offices. If you have any questions about the topics discussed on this podcast, please do contact our speakers. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Trading Straits. I'm Nick Austin, a partner in the shipping team at Reed Smith in London. I'm joined today by my colleagues, Thor Maloof and Alex Brandt, also partners in the team based here in the London office with me. We all work on disputes and advisory work in the shipping and international trade space. And we've come together today nearly 2 months after we hosted our Reed Smith event during London International Shipping Week in September. Seems a long time ago. And at that event, together with a panel of industry leaders, we discussed a number of the key issues affecting the global supply chain, and in particular, shipping's role within that. Decarbonisation, sanctions, trends in insuring cargo for a multitude of new risks, and the effect of the wider geopolitical picture across the globe. Today in this podcast, we'll be looking back at the issues we discussed at that event and asking whether anything has changed. And as we approach the end of the year, what the industry needs to be aware of at a time of great regulatory, geopolitical and technological change. So, Alex, if I can come to you first, sanctions is obviously a very fast moving area and impacts every part of the supply chain. Where did we get to in September and where do you think we are now?
Look, sanctions featured heavily at our seminar, and it featured heavily during the whole course of the week at London International Shipping Week. And I think there were a number of different reasons for that. One of the key reasons was that there was very heavy regulator presence. Representatives from OFSI, from OFAC, from DG FISMA attended various events during the week. And it was really it gave us an unprecedented opportunity to engage with the regulators, for them to hear us in plenary sessions and also in one-to-one meetings through the week. So that was extremely interesting, I think, for the industry players that attended. I mean, the main focus of the week was, from a sanctions perspective, was on the price cap. You know, the regulators gave their feedback on how they saw the price cap working. And I think the general feedback was they were very pleased with how the price cap had worked. They highlighted that it was presented unique challenges, trying to balance the geopolitical need to get oil from Russia to third countries, while on the other hand, stifling the Kremlin's ability to finance its war machine. So that was obviously a balancing act, which I think they felt they had successfully achieved. Their intelligence had been that they'd managed to significantly hamper Russia or the Kremlin's ability to make money, and that they had no intention of backing down on the price cap. Rather, they were going to double down and continue it. So that was the mood music from the regulators. I think, as we heard from our panel and from industry participants, you know, the concern was that's fine, but you know, with reports, widespread reports at the time and since then, the price of oil has only gone up. In the context of, you know, the caps being exceeded, real focus on circumvention, SCS transfers, AS manipulation, front companies popping up left, right and centre, how is that to be reconciled with the regulator's sort of tier-based approach to the paper-based exercise to price cap? And so it's fascinating. So those were the discussions then, and the regulators went away and they said that they'd give us fresh guidance, and they said that enforcement was coming, and that, you know, everyone had been given more than ample time to get their house in order, and if they were still breaching the cap, then they could expect, you know, the weight of the regulator, the authorities, come down on them. And that was how things were left. And then when they left the room, there was then a further conversation about compliance and what one does to make sure you remain compliant with G7 sanctions. And it was quite clear to me that, you know, the world has come a long way since the start of the war, and that all the players across the maritime sector have massively beefed up their sanctions compliance processes and invested heavily in that. So then fast forwarding to today, well, you know, you can't say they didn't warn us. The US has gone and started sanctioning people. They've gone after certain vessels. They've gone after certain owners. We've got certain commodities players that have been sanctioned. We have, and this is now widespread, this is now reported, across the media, widespread investigations by the G7 regulators into alleged breaches of the price cap, requests for information. That is keeping the industry very busy at the moment responding to those requests. It's quite clear that when that exercise is concluded, the regulators will have a huge body of information, which they will doubtless use to target those that those malign actors or suspected malign actors. So that was it was foreshadowed, and it has come to pass. And I think the final thing of interest has been on the UK side. Fascinating developments, a battle between the Court of Appeal, the English Court of Appeal, and the Foreign Office and the Treasury regarding asset freeze restrictions and how one construes control. The Court of Appeal clearly of the view that UK regulations are lacking in this regard, insufficiently clear. The Foreign Office and the Treasury have scrambled to try and minimise the disruption to industry following pointed comments from the Court of Appeal. So we've had new guidance to get on top of, and I think that is more than enough from me on sanctions. So perhaps with that, I can pass over to Thor. Thor, geopolitics is continuing to affect the supply chains. That is quite clear. To your mind, what were the big points? What are the big points when we look at supply chain risks?
So there are a few big points here. Firstly, physical war risks. Now, these physical risks continue to manifest themselves. Our speakers back in September, particularly our speaker from the Baltic Exchange, highlighted the point that a lot of people in the industry expected the Ukraine war to be a bit of a temporary interruption that just wouldn't be around for more than a year or so. I think we're now seeing quite clearly that it's far from temporary. And indeed, we know of some vessels and cargoes that have been stuck in Ukraine since February 22. So, whereas between July 2022 and 2023, there was the agreement with Russia to allow via a safe corridor the export of grain through the Black Sea, Russia ended that initiative back in July. And since then, we've had a unilateral NATO grain corridor being used. That's not been agreed to on the Russian side. And there have been instances of grain ships coming under attack and being damaged by mines. So it seems like the Ukraine conflict is not a blip, and it is continuing to disrupt the supply of agri products and will do for some considerable amount of time. And now, of course, we have the conflict in the Middle East, which raises questions of wider escalation there and possible disruption in that region as well, with, of course, the possibility of escalation there impacting oil supplies in the region. So physical war risks continue to play a part. Also, back in September, trade wars were mentioned. So in contrast with the physical conflicts like in Ukraine, which the market could look forward and saw coming and predicted, our speakers in September mentioned that trade wars, and in particular import-export bans, can manifest themselves really suddenly, almost overnight. So, for example, Trump's trade wars with China, involving export bans on US agri products, and of course, the reactions from China, including, for example, the switch from importing US to South American soybeans, they involved supply chains having to literally pivot almost overnight with almost no notice, and players ending up with stranded cargoes. So these sorts of trade wars could be set to continue, looking ahead to looming possibilities of potentially a re-election of Trump in the US and the apparent increased popularity of right-wing protectionism, including we saw the election last week of President Javier Milei in Argentina. Now, our speakers were really keen to stress that these problems are they really manifest themselves when we have uncertainty caused by these real rule changes that then knock on investment and stop investment. And that happens when our governments put out unclear signals about their longer-term intentions. Now, where we now seemingly have the UK cabinet changing literally week to week and a US election on the horizon, regional conflicts going on, it seems there's only going to be more uncertainty and lack of clarity coming from our governments for time to come. Now, another interesting and not so obvious issue that was raised back in September was the difference in compliance regimes. Now, our speaker from Hiscox Cargo Insurance built on this observation, and she highlighted differences in compliance regimes as another geopolitical risk. And she meant not trade wars and sanctions necessarily, but everyday regulations in things like customs, storage, safety, packaging regulations for things like batteries for electric vehicles. Differences between the regulations present a barrier to trade. And she was keen to highlight that there were even differences, for example, between South America and Europe in those regulations, and sometimes even a complete absence of regulations that are needed, which present barriers, risks, and uncertainty in the industry. Now, we're continuing to see a geopolitical landscape marked by probably less rather than greater degrees of cooperation between nations and a bit more pulling up the drawbridge mindset from our political leaders. So these risks presented by differences in compliance regimes between countries and regions do look set to increase rather than decrease, unfortunately. Now, last political risk or geopolitical opportunity that was raised was nearshoring. So one reaction to greater geopolitical uncertainty has been an increase in looking into nearshoring. And our speaker from Peninsula gave the example of the push for renewable energy production in the US. That might itself have been reactive to Chinese progress in new energy. Now, our speakers agreed that nearshoring in general can be inefficient because it's more costly, and in the shipping sphere, it can involve smaller lots for ships to carry. But it really presents opportunities for the shipping sector, where we have greater numbers of smaller shipment that can present opportunities for ship owners. And of course, the offshore energy revolution presents many opportunities in itself. Now, Nick, you mentioned earlier decarbonisation, and that was something we covered at length in September. What does that landscape look like now?
Yeah, thanks, Thor. I mean, that's right. I think there are still two key regulations that everyone is focusing on at the moment, and those are CII and EU ETS. And looking back to the event in September, we had a pretty lively and animated debate about the first of those, CII, the carbon intensity indicator, because of the controversial nature in which it is structured and the difficulties that parties encounter trying to incorporate it into their time charter models. But I think since September, there's some evidence that CII clauses are now being agreed in the market. You know, those clauses don't bear much, if any, resemblance to the BIMCO clause that was released in November 2022. But it's obviously clear that owners and charterers, certainly the ones that I'm seeing and advising, have realised that some accommodation has to be reached over how to deal with CII in the time chartered context, both new fixtures and ones on foot already. And as I recall, Mark Jackson of the Baltic Exchange, who you mentioned earlier, Thor, came to a similar view. The next challenge with CII will be to see what happens in 2024 when ships receive a rating from A to E, and owners, charterers alike are just going to need to see how the vessel performs relative to that rating in its trading day to day in real life. The other big show in town, as many will know, is EU ETS, the extension to the European Emissions Trading System of maritime emissions. And as we discussed before on this series of podcasts, shipping is being brought into the scope of that, I think with quite significant implications from the 1st of January next year, less than 50 days away. That's when it expands into the maritime sector to begin with on ships over 5,000 gross tons, which captures, of course, most of the commercial market. That regime will see obligations falling on what are called shipping companies, who will need to set up a range of new compliance procedures. They'll need to open operator accounts at the EU ETS registry. That's not straightforward. That needs advice and thought. They'll need to hold their allowances there, and they'll need to ensure that they are arranging their business in such a way that they're able to surrender the allowances annually on the specified date. And what we're seeing here at Reed Smith is clients coming to us on an almost a daily basis on the clauses that need to be agreed in time charters, in particular time charters, but also voyage charters, to deal with EU ETS. And again, BIMCO's had a role in that, quite an important role in the scope of ETS, because they produced model clauses for both time charters and voyage charters, which I think form the basis or solid building blocks for parties to agree the clauses that they need. But as those clauses are being agreed, I think there remains a pressing need for the industry to monitor the detail that's still coming from the EU. There are various issues that are not yet clear, even as we approach the launch date in January. And it's important that the industry keeps on top of that. So 2024 is the first year of ETS. It will be an ever-tightening regime as the years go on, but certainly for the first year, in general, only about 40% of EUAs or emissions for the applicable voyages will need to be dealt with by way of surrender of the allowances. A word, if I can, about another regulation. As time has gone by since our event in September, there's been an increasing focus on the new Fuel EU Maritime Regulation. It's a bit of a mouthful, but that will be effective from the 1st of January 2025. And what Fuel EU Maritime seeks to do is set what they call well-to-wake greenhouse gas emissions intensity requirements for fuel used on board vessels traded in the EU. There is plenty of questions, rather more than there are answers at the moment, about Fuel EU Maritime, but it's certainly something that is going to start taking up the attention of owners and charterers and the wider industry as we go through 2024. So certainly watch this space on that.
Thanks very much, Nick. It's just listening to your and Thor's comments, it's clear that 2024 is it's going to be another fascinating year ahead. But for now and for today, that brings an end to our Trading Straits podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you found it interesting. And if you have any questions on what you've heard today, please do get in touch with myself, Nick, Thor, or indeed your usual contacts at Reed Smith. But for now, take care, goodbye, and have a good rest of the week.
Trading Straits is a Reed Smith production. Our producer is Ali McArdle. For more information about Reed Smith's energy and natural resources or transportation practices, please email tradingstraits@reedsmith.com. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher, and reedsmith.com, and our social media accounts at Reed Smith LLP on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.
This podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship, nor is it intended to suggest or establish standards of care applicable to particular lawyers in any given situation. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome. Any views, opinions, or comments made by any external guest speaker are not to be attributed to Reed Smith LLP or its individual lawyers. All rights reserved.